And Cage is like, yeah, but we deserve it, right? We're like the best guys. We're like so cool and nice, right?
We're totally God's favorite, so...
Exactly, so we deserve it, right?
Bro, if you were God's favorite, you would not be living in a hole in the ground. Sorry.
So true. Hello and welcome to Hour the 100 podcast, brought to you by the Aficionados Podcast Network. My name is Robin Jeffrey. I'm a 28-year-old actor and artist. I like brooding anti-heroes, feminist agendas, and I remember way too many details that no one else cares about. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere, and our fun fact for this episode is, what's your favorite smell? Since the Mount Weather boys just love the smell of flowers and the outdoor air. My favorite smell, I think, a classic rain.
So good. Love rain.
Like when you go outside and it rained. Beautiful. I also like bounce sheets, like laundry. Like I'll go in the laundry aisle and just sniff stuff.
Yeah.
Like a weirdo. And then maybe a mainstream answer, but just like vanilla extract.
All of these are banger answers, honestly.
Right? And like I love candles, but specifically the candles that like smell like cologne, but they're like not as strong as cologne, basically.
Yeah.
Like the ones that are called like flannel.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like pine Christmassy type stuff.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite smells.
Those are all good choices.
Thanks.
And my name is Samantha Coley. I am a 31-year-old news editor at Collider. I like over 40s OTPs and making playlists. And I'm on Twitter at Sam Casey's, where you can find me yelling about television and fangirling middle-aged actresses. My favorite smells are very similar to Robin's. I would say like, definitely, like, the crisp rain smell, and... Mm-hmm. Like,
I really hope that's the smell that the Wallaces were smelling out there.
Yeah. I think so. Mm-hmm. And, like, I also really love Casey's Main Street Magic candle.
Mm.
It's, like, vanilla and...
That you can find at Lost and Found Candle Co.?
Exactly. I love that one, and what?
Wait, Sam, is there... a link to that in the description?
I think that there is.
I think there is too.
And if I had to pick another one, I'd probably say whatever they crank into the room in both Soarin' and
Oh yeah,
the Pandora flight ride at Disney World.
At Disney.
Yeah.
Great answers. Great answers. And today we have words to say about episode 207 of the 100, Long Into an Abyss.
This episode may contain spoilers for all 7 seasons of The 100.
Hey, welcome back. We covered 6 episodes of season 2 and then took forever. And now we're back. I was thinking, Sam, I remember like right in like March when we were like about to take the hiatus for Riverdale, I was like, we could probably squeeze one more episode in and then we'd be able to bring back with Spacewalker, which would be like such a bang, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
But I am so glad we did it this way because I was rewatching the episode last night and I was like, yeah, I need like a bit of a buffer. Like I need something to like bring us back into it before we go into one of my favorite episodes of this whole show. So right. I'm glad we did it this way.
This is a little aperitif. Yeah.
Exactly. So the title is a quote from Nietzsche. It is, "Whoever fights with monsters should see to it that he does not become a monster in the process. And when you gaze long into an abyss, the abyss also gazes into you."
I gotta say, I feel like all of these people became monsters.
100%. I feel like, and maybe it's just because I did the summary for the Mount Weather storyline, so I thought a little bit more about it. But like, I definitely see like Dante Wallace like staring at this quote and crying. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And I mean, I also think that like that is a central theme of the other storyline as well. And like, just they all do eventually just become products of war.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
right.
Just like, can we just smell the flowers?
Just have a nice time, please. Yeah. So before we go into it, a fun fact about the episode is that Eve Harlow is credited, but she does not appear. So possibly Maya was meant to appear, but the scene was cut. Yeah, interesting. She was credited, but she's not in the episode, obviously. So,
well, good for her for getting that credit, though.
So true. So we cut this episode into 2 storylines. One of them is significantly shorter than the other one, so we'll definitely be starting with that one. So we did the stuff that happens inside Mount Weather and then literally everything else. Because all of the stuff outside, like...
It overlaps.
It just intermingles. Exactly.
Like, it goes apart, but it overlaps enough that...
Yeah.
It's fine.
For sure. So here is my summary of the Mount Weather storyline. Outside of Mount Weather, Keenan enjoys the fresh air. She's being observed by Singh and Cage from inside. Once rain starts falling, her radiation blood treatment stops working. Cage tries to bring her back in, but Singh wants to leave her out there for more data and to keep their secret. They watch her die on the monitor. In the dorms, our friends complain about getting their blood taken so much. They want to try to escape, but Jasper says it's impossible. They're going to do some criminal stuff to get more information. Elsewhere, Singh and Cage do an autopsy on Keenan. The blood treatments will never be enough. They believe that if they take bone marrow from the 47, they will finally be able to live outside long term. Unfortunately, the amount that they would need would kill all of the kids. Singh tells Cage to convince his dad to approve this. Meanwhile, the kids break into Dante's office. Harper is put on lookout duty while Jasper just messes around. Monty and Miller find maps as well as pictures of Camp Jaha. They now know that their people are alive. Cage brings Dante outside in hazmat suits. They're able to take off their masks for a few minutes because of the blood treatment. They are so happy. Cage explains that bone marrow would make it so that they could stay permanently, but it would kill all of the kids. Dante refuses and goes back inside. Back in the dorms, Monty and Miller go over the map, and Jasper brings up that they haven't seen Harper recently. Harper is, unfortunately, getting drilled for bone marrow against her will by Singh and Cage, and it is horrifying.
Yikes, crispies.
Yikes. Not good. Ugh, man, but props to Chelsea for that scream. Absolutely iconic scream.
Oh, it's so good. Truly.
It's so horror movie. Very good.
Blood-curdling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So as I get started, just so you guys know, I did write these notes in March. I went over them again yesterday when I was doing my rewatch, but I did write them in March. So I will try to remember what the heck I was talking about. So Keenan, who is the girl that like gave them their tour originally when they first got to Mount Weather, she got blood from Monty or whoever, and now she's outside. From Monty specifically? Did I?
I think it.
I don't know.
I thought it was Jasper?
I thought so too.
I guess, but maybe Monty.
Anyway, like I said, I wrote these in March.
Maybe Monty volunteered also because Jasper had done it.
I'm just like, they must have said that in particular, or maybe I just misunderstood. Anyway, she got a blood treatment from one of the 47. Clearly they're all getting like jabbed and stuff constantly. I assume that she like wakes up and probably thinks she's in some sort of dream.
Mm-hmm.
But she sees the camera watching her and everything starts going wrong and she's banging on the door trying to get in. And it seems like the switch over was sort of maybe the rain, which I feel like it was maybe foreshadowing to the whole acid rain problem that they have in season 4.
Mm.
Possible, who knows? And Singh is like, oh my god, this is great. 4 minutes and 10 seconds, it's a record. How many people have you done this to?
Right, and how...
It's a record!
How many people have you also just not let back inside?
Right, exactly. How many autopsies have you done? But it seems like this is the first one that Cage has seen.
Or like, have you done this to her multiple times?
Right. Oh, and this time they were like, meh, let's just leave her this time.
Right.
I don't know. But it feels like this is the first time that Cage is in here.
Mm-hmm.
During it.
Well. You know?
So he's like, okay, let's bring her in. And Singh says, nah, she'll probably tell people what happened. We might as well just get all the information. And he goes, what? Like, but you said this could be permanent. She says, yeah, it takes time. We have to, you know, there's lots of dead ends before you find a solution. And Cage is like, well, she's a person. Like, she's one of us. We need to bring her back in. And Singh says that they need to sacrifice for the greater good. Keenan dies, and you don't sort of expect Cage to sort of be, like, the voice of reason here, but he sort of is in this scene.
I mean, he's the delineation of, like, this person is a real person and the rest of the people are not is almost worse than her. Because, like, yeah, she's straight up evil, but she's straight up honest about being evil.
Mm.
Like, what's on the tin is what's inside with her. With Cage, right. Like, fake pretends to be, like, a good person and, like, doing this for the right reasons. And, like, no, he's still just as evil. He just thinks he's a good person.
Right. Right. Exactly. Oh, yeah, you're completely right. You know, I mean, Singh says for the greater good and everything, but, like, she knows that what she's doing is, like, morally reprehensible.
Right.
But, like, I feel like Cage truly thinks that, like, what he... like, you said it. He thinks that what he's doing is actually right. Like, he thinks he's one of the good guys, actually.
Right. And, like, he literally sees his people as real people and everyone else as subhuman.
Right.
Which is what allows him to be evil.
Mm-hmm. So in the dorms, Harper talks about how she's been puking a lot and Miller's tired of needles, which I get. Jasper says that they're just buying time so that they can keep sort of like making a plan, because if they stop doing this, they're just gonna die. And Miller says, well, if we're gonna die, let's die trying to get out of here, you know, at least let's die not just giving up.
Mm-hmm.
And Jasper says we can't really, since Clark left, they've sort of like, you know, upped security at this point. And so we just sort of need to hold on until she finds a way to get us out. And Monty, ever the optimist, says, what if she never got out and they just killed her and now we're just doing this for them? And I'm like, don't worry, Monty, she's the main character. She's not dead.
She has plot armor, Monty, don't worry. None of the rest of you do, but she does.
But she does, exactly. You thought Bellamy did? No. Also not him.
No, just Clark.
No. Mm-hmm. So they're like, what if nobody's coming and we're just helping them? And Harper's like, okay, well, we need to figure out how to escape. And Jasper's like, no, we need to find the truth. And hey, why did we all end up here? Because we're criminals. So why don't we do criminal stuff?
Honestly, it's quite clever. Mm-hmm. And I respect it.
I honestly love the scenes of them sort of like leaning into their sort of like criminal ways, honestly, because it sort of reminds me of like that's sort of why I loved that episode in season 3 so much, where we like got a flashback to them when they were actually in the skybox and everything. It like reminds me that they have this in common, you know. It like it's very the 100 of them before all of these other characters sort of muddled that, not in a bad way necessarily, like when, you know, Lincoln showed up and Lexa and even Team Adults sort of like come in and muddle all of the main characters, which is great. But like, I really do love the like core of the 100 and like what they have in common and what their strengths are.
I think also building off of that, and like for me, moments like this really work to have like the characters driving the plot rather than the plot driving the characters, because I feel like that happens a lot in this show in particular, that the plot takes over and the characters sort of like become secondary. But when it links back to those like previous ties and that like depth and not just like the situation is wearing the characters, then I think that it works better and it makes those relationships feel richer.
Yeah, I agree. And I also, I'm sure I've said this in the past 6 episodes that we recorded, but having talked about season 3, it is so, so nice to just have Jasper back, like the Jasper that we sort of fell in love with. I just love seeing his like sweet, goofy smile. And, you know, he's not just depressed all the time, which obviously had a place in the story. But yeah, it's just nice.
It was hard to watch.
It's just nice to see him. It's hard to watch. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely. So they're doing an autopsy on Kenan, sitting in cage, and they're saying that doesn't look like the blood treatments are ever going to be enough. It's really just temporary immunity. So we sort of need to go to the source of the blood, which is bone marrow. And Cage asks what's going to happen to the donors. And Sing goes, well, I did some math. And if, you know, we want bone marrow, enough bone marrow for every single person down here, that needs to be 8 procedures for each kid, which is like too many. And, you know, they're all gonna die. And Cage goes, oh, my dad's not gonna like that. Which I think is funny that he's just like, well, I'm fine with that, but my dad is a good guy. Sorta. And he's not gonna like it.
I mean, I do think that he thinks, like, he's saying it from a perspective of, like, I'm down for this because you and I are on the same page of, like, doing whatever it takes to get out there. But my dad pretends to have morals still.
Right, like, right, exactly.
So, like, he does know that there are some lines that his father has not crossed yet that he and Sing have just danced right over.
Right. And I know that he, like, feels, I mean, Sing says, okay, convince your dad because then we'll all be living on the ground in literally a month. Like, this is what we've been waiting for. And Cage is sort of, like, not sure if he'll be able to convince him, but when he takes him out there, I feel like he feels a lot more confident and is sort of, like, surprised when it doesn't work. Even though by the end of the episode, when we see that shot of Dante sort of making the decision to go forward, I think, you know, it clearly did work, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me go down. I guess I couldn't super remember about, you know, at the end, Dante, like, has this yellow flower that they grabbed in a jar, and he's painting it, and he puts his brush down, and you can see he feels sad and bad, and I couldn't remember if he's sad because he'll never go back outside, or he's sad because he's gonna go give permission for, like, these terrible, horrible things.
Well, I don't...
Do you remember?
From what I recall, he doesn't actually ever fully give his permission. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't stop them from working on it, as far as I remember.
Right.
But he also still is, like, tempted to find an alternate solution that doesn't mean killing the kids, but also prioritizes his people over them. Like, they're still hostages, but, like, he doesn't ever quite get on board with, we should kill them all.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, like, that's what sucks so hard at the end when Kane is like, hello, we'll donate, right? It's just like,
right.
There's enough Sky people for all of us, and all of us, like, probably less than all of us would have to have, like, one procedure to help all of you, you know? And we would do that. And that's why it's like, okay, like, yeah, you have the 47 here, but, like, you know, there are more Sky people and you know that.
There are hundreds of us in existence and, like, we can, like, he knows, but they're already too far gone by the time they get that offer.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no way it was ever going to be accepted. And, like, they're too far gone morally.
Yes.
To even accept an offer like that, because what happens if you accept it and then you go up on the ground and you just run into these people who you've been killing and murdering and turning into monsters for
a century?
Like, mountain men aren't making it out of this, because they've done too many bad things.
It's giving a grounder and a mountain man walk into a bar.
Right.
Like, what happens, you know?
And, like, in that initial quote that is the title of the episode, like, you see how that plays out over the whole season. Like, none of the, like, Maya says right before she dies, none of them are innocent. And then, over the course of the rest of the show, Clark just stares into the abyss so long that she becomes the abyss.
Right. Exactly. I guess I'm just, like, I feel like this is something that they should have thought of beforehand. And I think, like, being able to go and find more Sky people, you know? And I agree that they're, like, too far gone at this point morally with the grounders. It's like, if they hadn't been doing this thing with the grounders, they could have been like, let's just be nice to the Sky people, and then they'll love and trust us so much that they're gonna bring in their own people.
Right.
And, like, there's another version of this season where the mountain men really were just people who were trying to help, and they were like, oh, hey, did you know that your people actually crashed and there's lots more of you now? And then, you know, they all come together and work together. Obviously, that's not something that Jason is interested in writing, but, you know, there is another world where that happened.
Yeah.
And the mountain men all survived.
Exactly. And, like, you build a positive relationship with another like, set of people, and then you can benefit from that positive relationship because you give things to each other that have value, and they give absolutely nothing of value to the space people.
Yeah. Interesting.
And honestly, maybe it's because they don't have anything to offer.
But I feel like they do. Like, I feel like they have this, like, a fortress, and they also have all of this information and knowledge, you know what I mean? Like,
that's true. Actually, yeah, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
And they have, like, half of world history just, like, stored.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, you actually have, if they had taken the time to be good people.
I just, like, I envision...
We may not have gotten here.
I envision Jason Rothenberg typing all this out and being like, ugh, and backspace. Happiness? Joy? Blech, gross.
Who wants to see people build a society? Ugh.
Nobody wants people to smile in this show. Ew. Gross.
Sorry, people are only interesting when they're suffering.
Exactly. So the kids are breaking into Dante's office, and Miller is sort of, like, watching out. He's worried about the camera. And Jasper says, no worries, we timed this perfectly, because Maya is in the surveillance room decontaminating it right now. So we are totally good. Nobody's watching us. I hope they're not recording anything, but I guess she'd probably be the one who's in there, like, sort of maybe stopping the recording and starting it back up again or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to trust that they thought this through. So Monty gets the door open, and Jasper says, that's my boy, which is so cute, and I love seeing Jaunty being happy and good and friends. It makes me so happy.
It's so sweet.
So they get into the office, and Jasper wants Harper to watch in the hall, because Monty's good with computers and Miller is a thief, so they kind of need them in here. And she's like, okay, what about you? And he's like, I'm the mastermind, you should go. And I'm like, that's stupid. Like, Jasper doesn't even do anything in there. Like, I get that it was his idea, but...
It's giving sexism, Jasper.
Truly, it's giving low-hanging fruit, Jasper. Like, we don't like it. Not a fan. So she goes anyway, and... I mean, it's like, that's the reason. I mean, later they say, like, we haven't seen Harper since we broke into the office. And I'm like, you mean you left the office and just didn't think about where Harper was after
that?
Like, what?
Like,
so, like, if it had been Jasper, Jasper would have been the one down there.
Yeah. And just like, to leave the office after having told her to keep watch. And then you go out there and she's not there. What?
What are you thinking?
You don't immediately think, oh no, something has occurred.
Right. Or, like, they leave the office, they don't tell Harper, Harper stays standing there, and then she gets caught.
Right.
Even though they've already left the office, you know? Like, who knows?
Idiots.
So, anyway, Harper goes, and Monty's looking through the computer, it's password protected, but he's gonna get to work hacking it, and Jasper's like, look at us, who would have thought? They said we had no potential, and now here we are. Right? It's cute. I love it. So, next time we see them, they're still going through the office stuff, and Jasper shows them, like, a cool sword, and they're like, hey, we're kind of busy right now. This is, like, not the time.
We're a little in the middle of something.
Yeah. So they both find stuff, and Monty finds these photos of Camp Jaha and their people. So now they know that their people are out there, which is good.
Yes.
Thank goodness that they're finally informed.
Very important. Like, I feel like we all get some important info in this episode.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. On the wiki, it said, when Jasper, Monty, Miller, and Harper break into Dante's office, Jasper briefly poses like former U.S. President John F. Kennedy in the portrait behind him. I tried to watch for this, and I don't know what moment they're talking about, but that's pretty cool if you can find it. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I guess.
Yeah. So Cage and Dante go outside in their hazmat suits, and Cage takes off his mask, and Dante's like, bro! Dude, what the heck? Before they even brought it up while I was writing my notes, I was like, I bet it smells so freaking good out there.
It's like, just crisp.
Crisp. Especially after living in some dusty-ass, musty basement-like place.
With 100 years of recycled air.
Exactly. Oh, I can't even imagine. It must be so good. And then they brought it up, which I was like, thank goodness. Because it's important to talk about.
And honestly, like, living where the show is shot.
Yes.
You and I both know that, like, you can just open the window here and it smells amazing.
Yeah.
So
good.
Yeah.
So Dante gets to take off his mask too because he also got the blood treatment. And Cage is like, Dad, we belong out here. You told me that the surface was our true home. And, you know, they're sort of enjoying their time. And then he says, we got to go back in. There's only a few minutes before we're going to get sick. You know, last time they did it, Kenan only had 4 minutes and 10 seconds. So, I mean, he doesn't say that to his dad, obviously, right. But that's the reality of the situation. And, you know, because they don't have any bone marrow yet. They so far only have the blood. And this is, like, so smart of Cage. Like, I hate it, obviously. It's horrible. But, like, I feel like this was a really good move for him because he knows that his dad's going to, like, long for this now. And he'll do, like, anything to stay.
Yeah, it's an expert manipulation tactic. Like, the way that he plays on, like, it's all good and well to, like, talk about something. But, like, having him physically experience it makes that, like, emotional tie that much stronger. So,
yeah,
of course it's going to be a more effective tool at convincing him.
Yeah, for sure. And so Dante says, okay, what is it going to take for us to stay out here? And he says, literally all of the bone marrow that they have. Sorry. So Dante goes, so they're going to die so that we can live. And Cage is like, yeah, but we deserve it, right? We're, like, the best guys. We're, like, so cool and nice, right?
We're totally God's favorite, so...
Exactly, so we deserve it, right?
Bro, if you were God's favorite, you would not be living in a hole in the ground. Sorry.
So true. And so Dante's like, we are the keepers of history, and what we've done has corrupted us, and we cannot do this anymore. And Cage is like, Dad, please! And Dante's like, no! And goes back inside.
Honestly, respect.
And, like, yeah. I feel like if I was Cage, I'd be like, dude, I pulled out all the stops. I pulled out all the stops, and it didn't work. You know?
100%.
So back in the dorms, they're looking at some sort of map that Miller found, and Miller, you know, with the information that they got, learned that the Alpha Station made it, and maybe some other ones. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they talk about how Miller was from the Alpha Station, and his dad was the chief guard, so he probably hated having Miller as a kid. And Monty says, at least you're good at being a thief? And they laugh together, and it's like little Minty crumbs.
Yeah.
When Minty was real.
Right, oh my god. So brief.
Back then. My next note was Monty has the engineering schematic, so maybe that's what they're looking at and not... Oh, that's what I wrote, some sort of map. So I think it's this engineering schematics that they're looking at. And then Jasper shows up and says no one's seen Harper, and so I was like, so they grabbed her from the hallway and no one freaking noticed?
Cool. I know. Ugh.
Cool of you guys. Great.
Jail across the board.
So down in some... the basement of the basement that they're living in.
Uh-huh.
Harper is on Sing's chair and is, like, asking for mercy. Cage is here, too. And she's like, don't worry, I'm just gonna do this, this, and this. I'd be like, damn, stop talking me through it, please. Like, I don't want to hear about what you're about to do to me.
Right, but...
it sounds horrible.
Here's the thing, I don't know that, like, I literally rewatched it this morning, but I can't remember if she's actually saying this for Harper or if she's recording herself, because doctors often, like, tape record themselves doing, like, autopsies or official...
doing, like, a dictation, you're right.
...procedures, so she's, like, probably dictating for her future self so that she knows.
That's worse. Yeah. That makes me feel... worse that she like does not care. Not that she,
yeah, because Harper's not even a person. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not that she has any bedside manner to speak of anyway.
Uh-huh.
But the fact that she's not even like, hey, thank you so much for your sacrifice, or like, hey, you know, you're helping us live and we appreciate you, you know, or like, hey, just trying to calm you down, I know that this is scary but you're really helping us out. It's really just like, hey, completely ignoring everything you're saying.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna be evil
doing something else,
if you're gonna be that evil,
be evil.
You have to separate the person from being alive in your head.
Yeah. What is it that she says that Jasper ends up saying to her as she's dying in that elevator?
Oh, right.
She's like, it's like, you're very important to us, or you mean a lot to us, or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, ugh.
It's so deviously evil.
It's so clear that that does not mean anything, and that you don't actually care about these people at all. So, she says it's not gonna hurt. Interesting. It's, like, clear that they put in some sort of local anesthetic because they are, like, she's cutting into her skin and, like, inserting, like, the drill, and it doesn't hurt, it seems, but then once she starts drilling, obviously, it starts to hurt.
Of course.
And she's, like, going through her hip. Ugh. Oh my god, I can feel it in my own body! I hate it! And so Sing goes, don't worry, Cage, Dante will come around. And it's like, what if he doesn't? And Harper goes, hey, listen, I just want to go home. And Cage goes, same, that's why we're doing this. I'm like, that's, it's not your home. You've never, like, hardly been there. Like, it's gross. And so she drills and Harper screams and I can't even imagine how much that would hurt. Like, gross.
Ugh. And honestly, that's another, like, comparison between the, like, different ways in which Sing and Cage are evil, because, like, she's detached from seeing Harper as a thing that's alive at all, and meanwhile he's fully aware that she's a human person and he doesn't care.
Yeah, gross. Bad overall.
And like Sing is also fully aware, but, like, it requires, I feel like, an extra level of just, like, inhumanity to be able to talk to the person that you're about to murder. Like, that's psychopath behavior.
Sam, do you mind if I talk about Lost for a second?
Yes, of course.
Thank you so much. So one of the things that happens quite early on in Lost, you know, we learn about Jack, who's the main character of Lost, and he's a doctor. And his dad is also a doctor, but he's always been very, very hard on Jack. And he's always talking about how he doesn't have what it takes to be a doctor, especially when he was a kid, and talking about how, you know, when he goes to work and he tries his best, but when children or anybody, I think in a specific monologue example that he says a little boy died on his surgery table, he has to be able to go home and eat dinner with his family and, you know, watch some TV and enjoy the rest of his night, because he cannot afford to have all of these things that, you know, maybe he tried his very best but it just didn't work out, and it can't, you know, you can't save everybody, and he can't afford to have it weigh on him for his entire life and just pile and pile and pile on top of his conscience.
Yeah.
And not, I mean, Christian Shepherd is a piece of shit. You know, watch Lost. But that sort of is what it's reminding me of, this conversation, is that, like, as a doctor, I feel like she's totally able to, like, sort of separate these parts of her life. You know what I mean? Like, she's able to sort of turn off that empathy or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not expect to talk that much about this storyline, to be honest.
We always do that.
It's true. So yeah, lastly we have Dante and looking at his little yellow flower that he collected and painting. We already talked about this scene, but he is maybe going to You know, he feels sad and bad, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Before we go into the rest of the episode, I'll talk to you guys quickly about Patreon. Patreon is a service in which you can donate to some of your favorite creators. Our Patreon is patreon.com/theafficionados. It's been a while since you've heard from us, so I'm going to remind you. We'd really appreciate your help over there. The $1 a month level gets you early access to every single podcast. This one comes out a whole week in advance. The $2 level is our Discord server, where sometimes I even post them earlier than that. The $5 level is 10% off at 3 different small businesses. And the $10 level is our Patreon-only podcast. And people seem to really enjoy it. We'd really appreciate your help over there, like I said. And our, you know, expenses are going up and up all the time. And this sort of helps us to pay those. So that would be great. If not, check out the small businesses or just recommend us to a friend because that's free. Does your friend feel sad and bad about what happened on the 100? Well, let us help console them and maybe give some solace because we also thought so. Yeah, okay. Anyway.
We also had a sad and bad time.
Yeah, but hopefully this is helpful. I heard, you know, I hear from a lot of people.
Catharsis.
I do appreciate anybody who comes to us about this, that it is, like you said, Sam, cathartic to, you know, hear us talk about it. So anything I can do to help ease the pain of what this show did to us, I will do that.
100%.
So we're going to do everything else now, and Sam did the summary for that.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, like, the main crux of this storyline, I'm just going to say this before I jump right into it, is sure. Should we be colonizers where we landed, or should we be colonizers a bit to the left? So
yeah.
That's the subject we're dealing with over here.
Right, exactly. Do I take 5 paces to the right, and then I do that, or yeah.
Nonetheless, here we go. So at Camp Jaha, which is now poorly named because the man did not die,
yeah.
Abby and Jaha discuss their current options. I'm surprised more people don't have trouble walking because they lived in, like, alternate gravity. Like, these people should...
Like sea legs, yeah.
...feel heavy.
Right, completely.
Like, even if they had artificial gravity, you know it's different.
Right, for sure.
So Jaha says they gotta get out of here, and Abby's like, bro, we just got here. And Jaha's like, he has a point because they are technically colonizers, but, like, they're just gonna be colonizing it wherever they go.
Right.
And so Abby says to, like, the crowd that the grounders are coming, and but they are, like, still weighing their options, and they're considering everything. And then Jaha basically hijacks her speech and is like, yo, pack your bags. We're going to wander into the desert. And he's still, like, he still can deliver an inspiring speech, but he's also, like, grasping at straws.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone has to make a decision, but it's really unclear what the right choice is, which is, like, the thesis of the entire show. Bellamy finds Clark in the crowd and tells her to get a med kit and meet him at the dropship. Finn is, like, blaming himself, and it's like, yeah, it's obviously your fault. But then Clark gets to the dropship and finds an eerily familiar situation with Lincoln tied up, but now he's infected with, like, the Reaper disease that they give them. Elsewhere, Dad Miller is upset with Abby for giving the order to leave, but she's also like, yeah, this sucks. I don't know what to tell you, though. She tells him that he has to be the guard leading, like, one of the guards leading the evacuation, and he's like, yeah, I'm not doing that. But she stands firm in that decision and orders him to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. So they get Lincoln tied down again. This time he's on the ground so that he has less opportunity for attack, I think.
Yeah, momentum, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And in order to save him, they need to treat his wounds, and Octavia leaves the ship to get supplies, but she gets yoinked by Nyko. He warns her that the grounders are coming, and if she doesn't leave, she'll die. They hear Lincoln, and they go inside the dropship. Nyko is, like, here to help, or so they believe. And then Clark recognizes that the phrase that he has said, your fight is over, in English. Basically, he tries to kill Lincoln because he's going to put him out of his suffering, because that's all they know how to do when people turn into a Reaper. Then Finn shows up and is like, hey, camp is evacuating because he also came to warn everybody. And Nyko is like, hey, you're a murderer. What if I just kill you right now? And I'm like, do it.
Yeah, I was like, that's fair.
Do it, King. Clark realizes that they can offer the grounders a way to save their people who they've lost to the Reapers. But she needs to go get her mom to do it. When Clark gets back to camp, they're in full evac mode. And Jaha is, like, telling Abby that she made the right call. And she's like, yeah, sure, fine, whatever. But then Clark shows up and is like, hey, we haven't been able to negotiate with these people because we haven't had anything to negotiate. But now we do. And she basically explains, before they can make any other further decisions, a fire appear through the woods that show that Lex's army is already there. Jaha argues that they should still go, but Clark is confident that her plan will work. Abby listens to her, and she refuses to begin the exodus and sides with Clark. And then Byrne and Miller also side with Abby, showing, like, that they respect her more than they respect Jaha, or probably a combination of they also would rather stay here and find the kids right. And find their missing people. In Lex's tent, Lex is like, why'd you kill my army? And Clark's like, why'd you send them to kill me? She basically plays on Lex's heartstrings by bringing up Anya and, like, leaning into... It's a very good negotiation speech. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, at the dropship, Abby is actively working on rescuing Lincoln as Clark leads Lexa down, like, through the woods to the ship. The detox meds that she gives him make his heart stop. Then outside, Lexa is already not in a great mood because you can see all of the crispy grounder bodies from the season one finale. As soon as Clark comes through the hatch, they all are like, oh dear, this is going very badly very quickly.
Not looking so good for us.
And they all grab their weapons and arm themselves. Abby happens to grab one of the shock lashes and realizes that she can use it to restart Lincoln's heart like a defibrillator, and it works. Mm-hmm. Later, Lexa is ready to strike peace with the Sky People and, like, begin a new way forward. The only stipulation for her, like, agreement to this is that they hand over Finn because he murdered a bunch of people. And it sounds like the easiest answer to a question that has ever been asked. So just give him up.
Right. Clark is like, what? Get this one guy for every single Sky person? This is hard to choose.
Like, sorry, he did so much murder. I don't care if he was the person that you slept with for the first time. Just
right.
Hand him over.
Get rid of him. Yeah. So, Camp Jaha, Abby says there must be something else we can do except for leaving. And Jaha says, nope, we have to go. We gotta go. We only have 16 hours until dawn, which is one of the lost numbers, question mark? I'm gonna pretend that's something.
Sure.
They're like, Kane is doing stuff and he's giving us a chance to move on. Jaha is like, he's giving us a chance to, like, keep living. And Abby's like, so we're just gonna, like, leave him there? And also, like, the Mount Weather kids? And Jaha's like, I'm sorry, there were, like, fierce warriors that are totally willing to fight and die for this cause, and they are on their way to us right now to kill us all. Like, we have mm-hmm. to live now so that we can fight later.
Yeah.
So Byrne comes in, and she goes, hey, can you guys, like, talk to everyone? Everyone's kind of freaking out, and they really need to hear from the commander. And Jaha goes, oh, yeah, sure, of course.
Let me just tee-hee.
And starts walking out, and they're like, not you, bitch! You're not the commander, actually. I love that moment. I think putting Jaha deeply in his place this episode makes me so happy. He's like, uh-huh. Well, I'm the best person ever. Like, it's like, it's so interesting because, like, we actively liked Jaha in season one.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then, like, you know, he just goes downhill so fast because he starts having this, like, savior complex / like superiority complex, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's big here. Big.
Here's the thing. I feel like if he had been played by another actor, that Jaha would be a much more compelling and interesting character rather than, like, mm-hmm. becoming one-dimensional like he does.
Yeah.
Like, if he had been played by even, like, Mike Beach, who comes on and plays a character in the third season, or, like, Orlando Jones, or somebody like that with, like, a more gravitas.
Yeah, okay, I have an actor in my head. I have an actor in my head, and I'll get it to you in one moment. Please go ahead and
I think I probably know who you're talking about, but I want to hear it. But yeah, it's just someone with more gravitas and, like,
Giancarlo Esposito.
Yes, like, just even any of these people with a stronger gravitas and a stronger, like, appealing, like, level of empathy as a person and, like, as an actor.
Yeah.
Like, I need to be able to, like, empathize with you just from the jump. Mm-hmm. And because it's Isaiah Washington, who is a known awful, terrible person who has awful, terrible opinions that actively harm the people that he interacts with, because it's him, it's so much more difficult to empathize with Jaha.
Yeah.
But when you see Jaha from an empathetic perspective, he's much more interesting as a character. Does that make sense?
I completely agree. Yes. And okay. And here's the thing. I know we've said this before, but just in case you're new, you know, we would never usually speak out like that on an actor, especially one that we don't know personally. But Isaiah Washington has personally wronged friends of ours actively.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, like, we know for a fact that he's a garbage person.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that he's a garbage person because he
has
very strong opinions that are harmful.
That are not good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And also, it's like, I can see from, like, Isaiah puts the parts of himself into Jaha, the parts of himself that refuse to listen to anybody else's opinions and know that he's right and have such conviction in, like, a bad way.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, I know no matter what you say to Jaha, he does not give a crap what you have to say because he knows his own opinion and he's not going to do anything about it. I think that in the hands of another actor, like you said, you know, there would have been, like, a part of him that you could see could listen and learn, but Isaiah brings into the character a steadfast, like, stick in the mud, line in the sand type energy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think that, like, and I've said it for years, that, like, a big thing that inspired The 100 was Lost. Like, Jason has said that Lost is one of the things that, you know, he brought into it, as well as Battlestar Galactica, of course. And one thing that I've always said, and I have, like, made graphs of, basically, is that there is a character on The 100 that is, like, a one-to-one to a Lost character. Almost all the characters.
Oh, yeah.
And Jaha's character is named John Locke. But John Locke is so much, because Terry plays him, he is so, and there are some people who hate Locke, but there are people who love Locke. You know what I mean? Like, I completely agree. And when you said that, I was just like, it's like Locke, you know?
Yeah.
Locke is likable in a lot of ways, but he's also unlikable in a lot of ways. And he has dimension because of that.
And, like, Terry does, like, I still am a Locke hater through and through. So sorry, Maria, if you're listening to this. However, Terry does play him with a level of empathy. So, so that, like, you do have that bit of, like, back and forth. And, like, that's not to say that, like, Isaiah, especially in this episode, I feel, does do a good job. However, I just can't stand him because of who he is. And,
And there's, you know, some people who will be like, well, separate the art from the artist. And it's like, yeah, that's hard when I'm looking them in the face, though.
It's a little different.
Yeah, right. So anyway, Jaha is like, oh, of course I'll talk to the people because they want to hear from their chancellor. And everyone's like, hey, you're not the chancellor. Sucks to suck.
By the way, we didn't mean you.
So Byrne goes, a vote actually needs to be done to change it back, or Abby can just give it back to you. And Jaha's like, oh, yeah, of course, Abby, just give it to me. And Abby's like,
just hand it over.
No?
Actually,
I think that you're going to ruin everything. So Abby goes, no thanks. I'm going to actually think if there's any other way for us to get through this. So let's just go talk to our people together.
Yeah.
So they step out and talk to the crowd, and Abby says, hey guys, the rumors are true. The grounders are coming, but we're still discussing all of our options. And Jaha's like, but everybody start packing because I'm going to win, you know?
Right. And, like, just the way that he hijacks it is just so, just like a man.
So this other guy's like, where are we gonna go? And Jaha says, I don't know, but I heard of somewhere called the City of Light, which is across the Dead Zone. And everyone's like, these are buzzwords we're not familiar with.
Right.
He said, like, and it's very cool, you know, like, we heard about the City of Light so much before season three. It made it very, very cool when we finally saw what it actually was.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was great. So the random goes, how would we make it there? And Jaha says, well, we made it here, so I have faith. And that's all we can do, because if we stay here, we're just gonna get murdered. So if Abby doesn't like my opinion, I'm gonna tell everyone else my opinion, and then hopefully she'll listen to them. Whatever. So Clark goes, but what about the people from Mount Weather? And Jaha goes, yeah, sucks, but... oh well.
Not my problem.
We can't end the story here, so we're gonna just have to be gone by tomorrow. And Abby's like, anyway, we haven't decided yet, but let's be prepared just in case.
But it does what it's supposed to, which is, like, sow discord.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Among the people. Which is, like, I feel like people take the wrong... The show took the wrong lesson from what the show was trying to do, I think. And then began to sow discord for the sake of discord.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Bellamy shows up, and we haven't seen, you know, or Clark hasn't seen him since they split up last episode. And he goes, you have to see something at the dropship. So Finn is like, it's my fault that they're attacking. And Clark goes, no, they're grounders. They just do that. And I'm like, no, I think it's Finn.
What is wrong with you?
No, I do think it was him, for sure.
No, I'm pretty sure we have the answer.
Yeah. So Finn says he's going to let Clark know if they reach a decision, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to the dropship. And we see Lincoln tied up. And it is obviously a parallel to season one when he was tied up in the exact same place. It's cool, but it's very heavy-handed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, you know, it's like one season later, in the exact same place, in the exact same person, tied up in, I think, the exact same way, you know? So it's like, yes. Yeah, I see the parallel, but it's like, it's a little bit much. You know, we could use some subtlety for it. It would have been a little bit more artistic, I feel.
I completely agree with you. And on top of that, it is starting to, like, veer into the torture porn aspects of the show.
Right, exactly.
That, like, become way worse, like, later on in the series. But it is, like, the first sort of, like, taste of that, I feel.
I think that one of the cool things that they sort of did with this in season one is that Lincoln was sort of, like, strung up like that. And I think it's impossible to sort of, like, string somebody up like that without the Christ symbolism.
Yes.
And obviously they sort of, like, do that a little bit more heavy-handed in season three with, like, actually nailing people to crosses.
Yeah.
But, like, with the Lincoln thing, it was, like, a little bit more well done because he was strung up like that and you know, knew that even though everybody else sort of, like, hated him, you knew he was a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, maybe Lincoln could be our savior. Like, maybe that's what they're trying to tell us. And in this, it's, like, it's not them being, like, Lincoln's our savior and trying to do that same thing. It's them being, like, it's a parallel to the last time we did it, you know? Because now Lincoln is, like, evil and drugged, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even, like, as good as it was last time, I think.
Yeah. No, that makes total sense.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, it's just us doing the same thing before, but worse. Yeah. Oh, well.
Remember the time we did this last?
Right. Remember when we did a good job? So Octavia's like, can you help him? And Clark's not sure. She's like, I knew Mount Weather controlled Reapers, but I didn't know they were creating them. It's a great moment of, like, you know, we sort of knew that, but, like, it's good that, you know, we all have more information now. A lot more information than we had before this episode. It's good that people are learning things.
Yeah, it's. I feel like that particular piece of information parallels Monty and Jasper figuring out that their people are alive.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Bellamy's worried about what could possibly be happening to their friends inside if this is what's happening to, like, the grounders.
Mm-hmm.
In the next scene, I just had to say, like, Ricky really pulling out all the stops. Like, he was amazing this scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This episode. Mm-hmm. Like, I believed it. He was, like, truly a rabid animal. You know? Like, he really threw himself into that role. And, kudos to him for sure.
Yeah. He did a great job of just, like, letting himself go to those places of, like, that horror. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's, like, convulsing. I think, you know, he's in some sort of withdrawal, I believe, is they probably said that. Clark notices the gunshot wound. Octavia admits it was her. Bellamy's worried because he lost a lot of blood. Clark notices the needle marks on his neck, and they sort of realize that it was, like, a drug that happened, which we already knew. The chain comes off the wall, and Lincoln grabs Clark to, like, I don't know, eat her, I guess, or attack her in some way. And he fights.
Whatever they convince. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he fights really well and almost wins for someone who's chained up. Like, we know how capable Lincoln is, and this is definitely shown here.
And it's also, like...
And Octavia ends up having to hit him with a metal rod to knock him out.
That's part of what, like, they do. It's like a super soldier serum, but...
Right.
Gone wrong, like, zombified and, like, radiation-ified.
Yeah.
And so it totally makes sense that he can beat them all up, even with just one hand tied to the wall.
Yeah. It's funny that you say zombie, and I totally see that. It's funny because when I was doing my notes, I can't believe it was this long ago that The Last of Us was on.
Oh my god, yeah.
But I was doing my notes in March when I was, like, actively watching The Last of Us, and, like, Clark almost gets bit, and, like in this last scene, and Octavia almost gets bit too, and I, you know, my initial thought was, oh my god, be careful, you're gonna get infected, you know? So it's interesting that you say zombie, because I totally see that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So back at Camp Jaha, Dad Miller's talking to Abby saying, are we officially evacuating? Like, what about my son? Abby says, I would have taken literally any other way out, but there is not one. So once we find somewhere safe, we'll come back for them. Dad Miller doesn't want to leave. Abby says, well, you have to or you'll be disobeying orders. And Dad Miller says, great, okay, there's a workaway around this. Order me to stay. There are other parents with missing kids who won't leave either, and I'll protect them. Like, this is how it's gonna work. And Abby says, well, that's just ordering you to die. Dad Miller says, it's like you said, Sam, totally great point. You got your kid back. And I feel like if Clark was still in there, you would not be leaving either. You know, like it's hypocritical for you to make me abandon my kid because you got yours back. But Abby ends up ordering him to report to Burn and get going. So,
and it's very much like I feel like there's a desire to prove a lack of emotionalness when like in like pieces of media depicting a woman coming into power for the like first time in her like. To this extent,
yeah,
there's a desire for the people like writing it to like cut off her emotional side and say that like that makes her a better leader. But I don't
Good point.
Think it works. Yeah, like I think that it always plays wrong.
What are they now? You know what? I am so glad that we recorded this so long after originally because hey, the Barbie movie came out in the interim. And what do they say at the beginning of the Barbie movie? They say like, my emotions don't hinder my ability to be a leader. It enhances my ability to be a leader.
Yes. Exactly.
Right? Abby is so Barbie coded. Abby is so President Barbie. So Clark needs to get the bullet out, and they've chained Lincoln to the ground now, like you said, and Octavia tries to give him water, but he almost bites her, which is when I'm just like, ah, zombie! Bellamy says, don't worry, once the drug is out of his system, he'll go back to normal, which is, I guess Bellamy just knows stuff. So Octavia goes to get more water and hears him yelling. She sees a white flower and runs into the woods. Nyko grabs her and he says, hey, just letting you know that the commander wasn't bluffing. Like, if you don't leave, you'll die. And like, you saved me, so now let me save you. Like, Lincoln, he's dead, but he would want me to help you. And then they hear Lincoln screaming and Nyko's like, what? And Octavia's like, it's Lincoln, he's alive. And Nyko's like, not for long.
Oh, well, let me put him out of his misery.
Yes. So back inside, Bellamy tells Clark that Abby would be really proud of her for what she's doing. And, you know, they're sort of like patching up his leg, I think it is again. So like, I guess she got out the bullet, if I had to guess, I think. And Clark says, well, my mom would be able to actually help him. Nyko comes in. Bellamy almost attacks him. Octavia explains that Nyko is a healer and is on their side because he also loves Lincoln. And so Nyko gets out his, like, healer's pack, and he's gonna give him, like, a little droplet of something. And he says, you gon' play Say Odon, and is, like, trying to kill Lincoln. And Clark, smart, knows what that means, stops him, catches the drop in her hand. And Clark is like, oh my god, you're trying to kill him. I don't know why I, like, expect this, like, Disney villain-esque, like, you know, when the droplet comes on her hand, it makes some sort of, like,
to, like, steam.
Steaming, and, yeah. Like, the steam is in the shape of a skull, you know what I mean? Like, I expect her to be like, ow!
Yeah.
Like, very Hercules, you know? I don't know why, but every time it happens.
I'm like, girl, wash your hands!
Exactly! I'm just like, what if you lick that by accident or something? Right. I don't know! What if you accidentally lick your dirty ass hand? So, they cut to commercial, and then when they come back, Octavia's like, bro? Seriously? I trusted you! And Nyko's like, yeah, that's like the only way to save him. Like, I'm putting him out of his misery. And I was like, wait, maybe this is The Last of Us, because this is what happened at the beginning of the season with Tess, you know? Oh, spoilers for The Last of Us, but watch it. Sorry. So Clark thinks there's a way to save him, but Nyko's like, well, if there is, I've never seen it happen. Finn ruins the mood and shows up and is like, hey guys.
As per usual.
We gotta go. Everyone's leaving. And Nyko's immediately like,
you're not.
You killed a bunch of people right in front of me and I hate you. And you slaughtered innocent people. And I'm like, this feels fair. This feels fair to me. Right? Like, nobody is...
Nobody is
out of the realm of, like, I don't know, even know what I'm saying, but, like
understandability.
Right, exactly. Like, it is a totally normal reaction in my mind for everybody trying to attack Finn. Like, makes total sense.
Yes, I completely agree.
Yeah. So, Bellamy wants to shoot Nyko because he's like attacking Finn, but Octavia won't let him because she likes Nyko, and Clark ends up shocking Nyko with the shock lash to sort of like knock him out, or at least like knock him down. That's when they notice that Lincoln has stopped breathing and that his heart has stopped, so Clark starts doing these chest compression and he starts breathing again, and Nyko is like, oh my god, how did you do that? Like, he was dead. Like, I totally get it. Like, it makes complete sense, but it's so funny that Nyko was like, I'm a healer, but I've never seen CPR before.
Right.
CPR, crazy to me. Like, makes sense. How would he possibly have seen CPR? It's just funny.
But it's like, here's the thing, though. Like, it doesn't make sense for the society to, like, if people have done, like, examined, I don't know, through human history, I guess.
Yeah.
That the amount of time between the apocalypse and now is not enough for society to have gotten to, like, the point of lacking in knowledge that they have. Like, to have forgotten that much, I guess.
Right. Like, Becca would have taught them as much as she knew.
Right. And I mean, they were...
But she died, question mark? Like, I can't even remember. It was stupid.
I mean, well, no, people that generation that lived...
were there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, survived. Like, these are still people that made it to our time and then died.
Right.
Like, the... Like, they're raised by people who, like, made it to our time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, yes, yeah.
It's not like...
Like, this should have made its way down the generations.
Right. It's not like the apocalypse happened in, like, the 1600s.
Right, right.
Before things like this were invented. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you. And so, like, Clark is like... So wait, this is how Reapers always die? Like, if we could maybe save people. Like, we can stop the attack by telling them that we know how to heal Reapers, and we can get so many of their, like, loved ones and numbers back, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a good plan.
Yeah, yeah. So Clark goes outside, and Finn is, like, sitting sadly, like, I always mess everything up.
And that's correct. You do.
I'm the worst. Yeah, you do. So Clark says, Lincoln's stable, like, we should go. And Finn says, you know, Lincoln will never be the same because of what he's done. And I'm like, who else are you thinking about? Like, Finn is very much like,
this sounds personal.
My friend is very sad about the murders he's committed. Oh, okay, who's your friend?
He would really love to talk to someone about it.
My friend could really use a therapist. Not me, but my friend could.
After all that murder he did.
Yeah. But Clark says that we can say that she can save both of them. And I'm like, don't count on it. I don't think so. In fact, by the end of next season, they're both dead, Clark.
Yikes.
Yeah. So the camp is getting ready to head out. And Jaha's like, Abby, you made the right decision. And I'm like, don't patronize her. Shut up. I hate this man.
No, exactly. Like, he's just, his vibes are so bad.
Yeah, his vibes are bad. I mean, you got it.
His vibes are bad.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Abby's literally been wrestling with these... Wrestling.
Wrestling?
Horrible. Wrestling with this quandary all day, and she still doesn't feel good about the decision, and you're just like...
Yeah.
It would be different if he was, like, saying it to offer her comfort, but it's like he's saying it to keep convincing her.
Good job, Abby. I knew you'd finally get to the right decision. But you'd finally listen to my right opinion. So I'm glad we finally got there, you idiot. Ugh, gross. So Clark shows up and she's like, hey, where have you been? Just wondering. And Clark's like, not important. By the way, I can stop this. And she's like, the reason why we haven't been able to negotiate is because we don't have anything to offer them. But what if we can eliminate their biggest threat, which is the Reapers? And Jaha's like, Abby, there's no way you're considering this. And Abby's just like,
actively considering.
Well, maybe I am because you keep talking to me like I'm an idiot.
Right.
Maybe if you were nicer to me, then maybe I wouldn't. Maybe I'd go with you if you stop talking to me like I'm stupid. So everyone sees the torches of all the soldiers out in the distance, and it's very menacing.
Oh yeah, it's just unsettling, like, the amount of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there's no way that they could, like, try and fight their way out. It's like the immediate realization.
I hate to bring up Lost again, but they did this in season 2 where like one of the others, like, showed up and they were like, I bet you're the only one here, and then just, like, a bunch of torches, like, showed up out, like, in the surrounding of the circle, like, surrounding them. And so, yeah, it's just, they done this already, but that's okay. So Clark says, we're okay right now, like, they haven't attacked yet. Abby says, there's 2 hours until dawn. Like, girl, I'm so tired. I've been awake all night. Like, let's get a move on.
Mm-hmm.
Clark's like, I want to talk to the commander. She was Anya's second, and she might listen to me. And Jaha's like, she might not even be here. She might have just sent people. And Finn goes, oh, no, she's here. Nyko said she was here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, Nyko, the guy whose family you killed?
Right.
Cool. Jaha's like, this is stupid. Like, Abby, just make me the commander again.
He's like, I'm sick of not being in charge. Just hand it over.
I hate this man. So Abby's like, no. But also, we don't even know what Lincoln's going through. Like, what if he dies from the detox and then, like, we're back at square one, basically, right? Or like, worse, even, because now they think you lied to them, right?
Right.
So Clark's like, well, maybe I can't save him, but you can, because you're amazing and beautiful, also.
And, like, the best doctor in the world.
Yeah. And Abby's like, but what if I can't? And Clark's like, you have to. And she's like, oh, okay.
I think it's a good...
Cool, thanks.
...parallel to, like, she says that here. And then when Clark is, like, on her way to out, Abby sort of gets it back at the same level of being like...
Right.
Okay, well, if you don't convince her, then we're all dead.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's kind of right. Them both being like, you have to do this or we all die. And they both, like, push that chip at each other.
Okey-dokey.
And I think in less dire circumstances, it would be funny.
Yeah, exactly. And so Jaha's like, this isn't really something we should be, like, gambling with. Like, we know exactly how to save all of our people, which is to leave. Like, why aren't we just doing that? And we'll come back for the kids in freaking Mount Weather.
Yeah.
And Finn is like, well, I'm going to stand up to you now. And he says, it's not going to happen. They're going to be stuck in there. We're never going to come back for them. Jaha says, Abby, if you don't give the order, you're going to be killing everybody. And Abby's like, nah, I'm not going to do it. And Jaha's like, okay, what if I come and whisper in your ear about it? Like, will that make you do it? I'm going to say the exact same thing, but I'm whispering it in your ear now.
it's such a, like, he doesn't even have the data. It's a deliberately, there's a word for this when you're, like, arguing with someone about politics, but it's a deliberately, like, I don't know if it's exactly whataboutism, but it's, like, an exaggeration of the truth in such a, like, drastic amount that it leaves the realm of worth arguing with.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like, that's what he's like.
Yeah, it does. And
I
think there's a word for that too, but I don't know what it is either. I can't recall. Yeah. Yeah. But it's so funny. He's like, what if I say the exact same thing and whisper it in your ear? Is that going to work? And she's like, no. And I'm not sure why you thought it was going to work.
Right.
I really don't. In fact, I hate it more.
Yeah.
I want to do it less now. So he's like, well, I'm the elected chancellor, so do it. And she goes, no, sucks to be you. No, I won't. We thought you were dead. I kind of a little bit wish you were. So Jaha tells Dad Miller and Major Byrne to arrest Abby and Clark and Finn because they need to be ready to leave too. Like, it's nice that he doesn't want to leave them behind either, you know, but we are leaving. And they don't. And he goes, hello, do it. And they just stand there. Oh, it's so good. And Abby goes, put Jaha in the stocks, actually. He's being annoying. And they do it.
They do.
Jaha's face is so good. It's so satisfying. It's great.
100%.
Yeah. She does call him the chancellor, though. And I assume that it's sort of like Obama, how Obama is, like, always President Obama, even though he's not the acting president anymore.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's why she calls him Chancellor Jaha, I would assume.
I think so. And also, like, Abby does still respect him as a person.
Right.
And I think it's her way of sort of, like, saying, I still respect you, but you're wrong right now.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And so he goes, you know, everything we did, like, you're throwing it all away. And Abby says that she has faith in her daughter. And I'm like, yeah, she's the main character. But, like, if this was real life, I'd be like, that's a lot of people to put on the line for your teenager.
Right.
For what you think your teenager is doing, but okay, you know.
But, like, out of context, I completely agree. But within the context of the show, Clark is the expert here. And, like...
100%. She knows more than everybody else on the show.
I enjoy when the show has Clark and Abby on the same page because it makes them...
There were so many times when they didn't do it.
Right. And, like, in those times that they didn't do it, it was like they were, like, shaping Abby into disagreeing with Clark just for the sake of having someone disagree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rather than, like, it serving a dynamic or, like, compelling conflict, like, source of conflict.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Whereas, like, they're able to have conflict here, but I think I got away from the point I was actually trying to make.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. Clark is an expert here because she's been here the longest. And mm-hmm. so...
She's been here the whole time.
It compares to the beginning of this season where, like, Abby and Kane basically showed up and were like, we're in charge now, don't worry about it. When, like, it would have been smarter to take advice from the people who have been here because they are the expert in it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So... Abby tells Clark that she wants her to take some guards with her, but Clark is worried that she's going to seem too threatening, so she doesn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And Finn is going to take Abby to Lincoln, and she's like, Clark, you better freaking not be wrong about this, because we're all screwed. So, in the morning, Clark walks up to the tent, and Gustus is outside. Gustus, I know something bad about you is going to happen soon. Something bad. And he goes, hey, if you even look at her weird, you're dead. And Clark goes, cool, and goes in. And this is the first time Clexa ever meets.
Honestly, iconic.
First meeting of Clexa.
For the ages. I still love Clexa so much. The, like, enemies to lovers chemistry is immaculate. And, like, this is such a good, like, enemies but equals sort of, like, meeting.
Yeah.
And, like you can tell immediately that Lexa is a foil to Clark. Like, yeah.
Yeah, totally. And, like, Lexa's sitting there in her cool throne with her cool knife, and Clark is like, uh-oh, she's very hot.
Exactly.
I did not get to see any pictures. Whoopsie! Yeah.
I was not emotionally prepared.
They're both like, uh-oh, this is going to emotionally compromise me. Politically! Whoopsie! So Lexa goes, so you're the one who killed 300 of my warriors. And Clark's like, yeah, and you're the one who sent them to try and attack me. Anyway, they're both like, interesting, just like checking each other out. So Clark is like, I have an offer. And Lexa's like, not sure when this was ever a negotiation, but okay. Indra is like, how rude and disrespectful, I'm gonna kill her immediately. Clark says, we can work together against the mountain men. We have this common enemy. And she explains what she saw inside the mountain and how there were grounders in cages being bled out. She's like, literally, I saw it. Like, I have people in there too. We can work together on this.
Mm-hmm.
Indra says, no one escapes the mountain. You're lying. And Clark says, no, Anya and I did escape the mountain. Indra says, you're a liar. Anya died in the fire. Clark says, no, and reaches into her pocket. And it's very tense because, you know, it could be anything.
Uh-huh.
And she gives her, like, a lock of Anya's hair. And Indra's like, well, we don't know if that's hers. And Lexa's like, well, let me sniff it. I know her shampoo. And she's like, she was my mentor before I was called away. Like, I know her hair anywhere or something.
I kind of wonder if there was a, potential, before they wrote the storyline with Lexa's, with Kostya?
Kostya,
I guess.
Yeah.
I wonder if there was an intention. I feel like there was, and I can't remember it, to imply that there was a romantic relationship between Lexa and Anya.
Was, like, they don't look that much different in age, but, like, if Anya was, like, the first and Lexa was the second, would there be, like, that much of an age difference between them? I don't think so, right?
I feel like it wouldn't be a huge gap, no.
Yeah, yeah. I think that even if it was one-sided, that would make total sense that Lexa, like, loved Anya.
Mm-hmm.
Loved, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So she asks if she died well, and Clark goes, yeah, she totally did. And I'm like, she was just shot.
Straight up did not die well.
She falled on her face.
But she has to, like, straight up lie because...
Yeah.
If she says, no, my people shot her.
Yeah.
Then it's like...
They're like, yeah, take everything back.
You're right not to trust us, actually.
Right, exactly. So she's like, she was with me trying to get a message to you. We were working together. This is the only way to save everyone is for us to work together. And Indra goes, yeah, whatever. You're just, like, desperate. And Lexa's like, honestly, Indra, like, shut up for a second, though. Like, this hot girl is talking to me. Can you give me a second? You're totally ruining the vibe. And so she says, okay, what is your offer? And Clark says, I can turn Reapers back into your people. I've done it with Lincoln. Indra says that Lincoln's the reason that Village was slaughtered and calls Lincoln a traitor. And Lexa says, Kate, prove it then. Take me to Lincoln. And they're going to head out.
Yep.
So at the dropship, Finn brings Abby in. And Lincoln looks really rough. His eyes are bloodshot. His pupils are unresponsive. And she starts basically getting started.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Clark is bringing Lexa and the army forward. Abby's giving him medicine. He freaks out about getting a needle, which I totally get. And makes complete sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I can't tell if, and maybe I have to rewatch it. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I wonder if it's, oh my God, don't give me another needle. Or is it, oh my God, give me that needle right now. You know what I mean? Like if he can't figure out what type of needle it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't, I think that that's like, there's no ability to discern that anymore.
Yeah, yeah. But so his heart stops again and Abby gets going. Lexa sees all the charred bodies at the dropship. Like you said, like, not really the best, like, backdrop for what we're trying to do here. Like, that's another thing. And like, maybe that was the point, but I feel like if we had put Lincoln somewhere else, I don't even know where that place would be. Mm-hmm. But like, if we'd put it somewhere else, you know, the parallel wouldn't have been as heavy-handed. And, you know, then we would have had more of a... an advantage with Lexa not looking down at all the people that Clark killed.
Yeah.
You know, just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they start heading in and, you know, they're still working on it. It's not working. Abby's like, kind of gives up and is like, I don't think I could save him. Octavia starts working on him instead. You know, she doesn't give up. Clark shows up and he seems to have died. Lexa sees him and Bellamy starts to sort of reach for his gun because clearly this is sort of going to go sideways.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Indra is going to do the same thing and we're sort of at a standoff here.
It's like a half a dozen people all coming to the same conclusion at one time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It is cool to like have all these characters in one space, like the characters that we have never seen together before, which is pretty cool. This scene is sort of also giving this one episode of Lost called All the Best Cowboys Have Daddy Issues. It's in season one where, you know, you think a character has died and the one character who's a doctor just won't give up. And, you know, then they give up and they think, oh no, he's dead. But then they keep going and then he lives, you know? So it's sort of giving that again. But so Clark is like, yeah, so here we are. And Lex is like, so you're a liar and time is up. That's when Abby takes the shock lash and shocks Lincoln in the chest with the stick twice, like you said, with like sort of like a defibrillator, and he starts breathing again and he remembers Octavia, so he's like basically cured. Lexa and Indra are like, damn, okay, wow, maybe you weren't lying, very cool. And Lexa puts her sword away and we're sort of like back on okay terms.
I would love to hear a medical professional talk about what just happened.
Katie, oh my gosh, Katie, if you're listening, sometimes Katie sends us in her medical opinions and I do appreciate it so much. Katie, if you're listening, please let us know your thoughts.
What drug did Abby give him for such a rapid detox?
Mm-hmm.
Can it actually stop your heart like that? And is it possible to revive him the way that she did and have him immediately be coherent?
Like, if it is...
I want to know. Those are my questions.
Yeah. If it is sci-fi, you know, then like, okay. But like, sure. I'm just curious if there is a like actual scientific explanation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Lexa says it's very impressive. Like no one's ever survived before as far as we know. And Clark is like, the secret is just to keep them alive long enough for the drug to leave the system. Cause the detox is like so bad that it just kills them basically.
Mm-hmm.
So Lexa agrees to a truce, but one thing she wants in return, and it's so funny because Clark is just like, anything. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, 100%. And she's like,
no problem at all.
Yeah, bring me Finn. The truce begins with his death. Yeah. Like,
and like,
okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. As I'm watching it, I'm like, yeah, exactly. Easy. Good answer.
Yeah, right.
It's like not even.
It's so funny.
That's not even a difficult stipulation. Like,
yeah.
You could have said so many worse things other than give me the guy who killed a bunch of people for no reason.
Yeah. Right. It's so funny. Clark is like, yeah, whatever. And Lex is like, oh, I'm glad you feel that way. Yeah, I want Finn. And Clark is like, oh, no.
My boyfriend?
That's the one person. Right. Yeah. Ugh. Me boyfriend? Yeah, not so good. Yeah. Well, let's see what happens.
Yikes.
So let's go into segments, my friend. Our first segment is the post-apocalyptic Sasswatch, aka our favorite line award. My favorite line award goes to Abby and Major Byrne for...
Major Byrne, Sergeant Miller, put Chancellor Jaha in the stockade.
Yes, ma'am.
And the look on Jaha's face when it happens. Oh, it's art. It's beautiful. So satisfying.
So mine is also from this scene, just a few lines before this. And it goes to Abby for putting up with that whole big, long nonsense speech from Jaha and his intimidation tactic and being like, are you done yet?
So good.
Give the order to begin the exodus.
No. Are you through yet?
And my segment is, what is Sam shipping the most? And this week it's Plexa.
Gotta be.
Yeah.
For sure. And now it's time for Robin's Murphy moment. No Murphy this episode, but I picture him packing a little bag and wondering what Bellamy's up to. I wonder if Bellamy will room with me at our new quarters, wherever we're going. All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode.
Our music is Terminal by Goodness Teens.
Thank you so much to anyone who shared space with us while we recorded. For me, it was just my dog, but thanks to him, even though he was a little itchy boy and made some noise.
And for me, thank you to my wife and my dear friend Emily for putting up with me still talking about this show.
So sorry. You guys, if you're a fan of Riverdale, we like to talk about that show too. Guys, it's over. It happened. It's done. We can now offer you I was going to say little package, but it's a very large package of every single episode of Riverdale. You don't have to watch Riverdale to listen to it if you don't want to. And we're also going to be going back and starting next summer, we're going to do a little rewatch podcast. It's not going to be as in-depth, obviously, but I'm actually really excited. I love that show so much and I miss it already. So hope you'll check it out.
Yeah. And if you're a fan of Stranger Things, you don't know this because you're not listening to it today, but this is recorded on Stranger Things Day.
Oh, it is. You're right. Right, right.
So if you're a fan of Stranger Things, we like to talk about that show too. We have covered every episode of the first three seasons as well as the first two episodes of season four, and we're actively working on season four to like kind of fill the what looks to be very long hiatus between season four and season five.
Yes. And sorry I talk about it every time, but I'm also not sorry. If you're a fan of Lost, we like to talk about that show too. It is, I feel like if you love The 100, looking back on what was like one of The 100's forefathers is like really important.
A no-brainer. Yeah.
Yeah. In my opinion, right? And it is one of the best television shows ever made. It's literally art. You guys should go check it out. That podcast is my pride and joy. And we have guests over there with a spoiler section at the end. So if you're watching for the first time, you can listen along. And yeah, that would mean the world to me. I really appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
You can follow The Fictionauts on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and our new TikTok.
Yeah. It's, I guess, not a new TikTok at this point, but this will be the first TikTok that I'm making like videos for The 100. So go check it out. Our Patreon, like I said, is patreon.com/theafficionados. If you like what we do here, please consider donating. It's expensive with our money, this hobby, and it's also expensive with our time. So anything you can do over there is helpful, and we'd really appreciate it. If you can't do that, check out our small businesses. They're all in the description, or just recommend us to a friend because that's free. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey. That's RobynEJFFrey pretty much everywhere.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Sam Casey's, which is SamCasey's.
Our next episode is episode 208, which is called Spacewalker. This is my favorite, if not one of my favorite episodes of this entire show, so I'm very excited to talk about it. Even though it's like so centered on Finn, I think that it's like one of the most well done episodes of the show.
I think it is objectively one of the best episodes of the show, and is one of the few episodes where everyone watching at the time was like, oh, I can take this show seriously.
Right, exactly. It was like, wait, maybe this show is like more than just a guilty pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah, for sure. I'm very excited to talk about it.
And then it was like, never mind, actually.
Yeah, and then it was like, oh, I take it back. Yeah. but yeah, I'm very excited to talk about it with you. I love you so much. And that was to Sam, but now this is to you guys. Okay, love you. Bye.
Okay, love you. Bye.